Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Franny Tacey. Franny is the first female farmer, hemp farmer in North Carolina, and the CEO and visionary behind Franny's Pharmacy. Thanks for joining us today, Franny.
Well, I am super glad to be here, and I would like to put one adjective in front of the first hemp grower, and that would be legal hemp grower in North Carolina.
Legal. So you're talking about the outlaws, the legacy market, so to speak. Huh? I mean, talk to me about that. You know, did you have to, how did you take care of them? Or, you know, so you're the first legal one, right?
Yes. And I actually even put that disclaimer when I did the TED Talk in 2018. I was a little nervous to do that, actually. They said, you know, this is still federally illegal and all the risk that came along with that, even though we were operating under a pilot program in North Carolina. So, yeah. It's been an interesting ride.
Talking about that in terms of that pilot program, right? So, I mean, I think we're all familiar with the farm bill and everything that goes along with it. But talk to me about that pilot program. What did that entail, you know, and what did that process look like in terms of from the beginning to end?
Well, we're real close with Kentucky, and I got lots of farm friends there, and North Carolina soon followed. But North Carolina was unique in that we were the only state that funded our pilot program to grow hemp by farmers. It took us almost 2 years, and it was actually driven by farmers. We had to raise $200,000, get 100,000 signatures, create a hemp commission, all these really interesting parameters so that we could even legally grow. And it was all with this motivation to revitalize our agroeconomies, especially here in the Southeast, which has historically been agriculture-based. And so it took a long time. And we were the seventh state to actually grow, the ninth state that got an industrial hemp pilot program license. And then soon, within 2 years after that, it did become federally legal. But so it's been a really interesting process to be some of the first online here in the Southeast and really driving the whole political and research from variety trials, everything behind hemp coming in mainstream.
That's really cool. You know, I think, you know, talking about that, the Southeast, you know, and kind of that passion behind the agriculture. And, you know, I definitely want to get into, obviously here, we're going to be talking about, you know, hemp as a food, as shelter, everything like that. And also talking about what you guys are doing there in Franny's Pharmacy, you know, but also franchising and kind of what's that model kind of look like and your experience, you know, coming into it. But, you know, before we get into all that, you know, talk to me about, you know, what makes it so special in North Carolina or passionate in the Southeast, right? I think we talk about, you know, people a lot of times think that this stuff was coming from out West, right? You know, as if, you know, Colorado, California, in terms of the cannabis game, right? But it seems to me like, you know, like you're saying, Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina got a lot of skin in the game. You know, why have you guys kind of taken it on so hard? You know, you talk about your past with agriculture. Is there a big history there with hemp as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if we look historically, the Southeast was predominantly the area where hemp was grown. And actually, it was mandated. You had to grow hemp here. It was legal. You could even pay your taxes in hemp crops. So if we look back historically, you know, hemp did originate and it has grown here. We know the success of it. And actually, as we brought that online, we are looking at written notes back from the early 1900s of how they grew. That was all we had. And in the Southeast, based on an agricultural, you know, commodity, this is what our region is based on. And we've had been super hit very, very hard economically, and as far as progressive and legalities, we weren't going to be able to jump into the cannabis game on the marijuana side. That was already been, you know, taken advantage of. And the West is the one that had initiated that. And with all those regulations, it just, there's no way. I mean, it will probably not even be federally, it will be federally legal in the Southeast before these individual states start coming on. So hemp is just a perfect example of what fits in from the past to the present now and into the future.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, with the history there, I think that's something that, you know, some people want to think that this is like some new industry. It was just created. We just found out about cannabis, everybody, you know, like we just found out hemp. Wow. You know, it can be used for this and that, the other thing. Right. But like you said, there's so much rich history there. Right. You know, talk to me. Why is it that you say, you know, the cannabis, you know, on the THC side, you know, California, Colorado, these are the places that, you know, the states aren't going to buy into it until it's federally legal. Is it a logistics thing? Is it a conservative, a stigma thing? What's behind that kind of mentality?
It's the Southeast. I was born and raised here. I lived out West, went to forestry school in Flagstaff, Arizona, lived out West for ages, but it's the Southeast. So there's a lot of things that it stems beyond just an agricultural issue. It's really a political, religious, social issue as to why these will be the last states that would ever switch to or jump on the marijuana cannabis side of it before hemp. I mean, the only way we even got legalities to grow hemp is under a test program and that it was an agricultural commodity. And we were really selling that on the fiber side. We really thought that food and fiber was going to be the avenue for hemp in the Southeast, but the market demanded CBD. And our first year that we actually grew, we got our seed crop. It was illegal to transport seed or plants anywhere in the U.S. at that time, back in 2017. So we actually had to get our seed from Italy. And it was a food and fiber variety. And it was the next year that we got on board with geneticists, global researchers to start researching these hemp varieties. And this is super cool because Franny's Pharmacy originated from Franny's Farm. And we will be the first trial data for varieties with Triangle Hemp and Front Range Biosciences that have, after this year's grow, clinical research and data from hemp variety trials. That is not from 1900, 3-year trials on farm trials. So that is really great for this industry. It is so new and we need this consistency and we need to be able to, in order for our business to open up and become more profitable. Right now, we have so many restrictions and barriers and things that keep our profit margins low. Although from the outside, they may think, oh, they're making millions because of
anybody in the industry knows that that's not true.
A lot of these humps we're trying to figure, you know, when you're looking at 40% of the people that grew, you know, had hot crops or crops that weren't sellable, then another 40% didn't grow a crop variety that produced something that was marketable to make a profit, then made the market, but not profitable. These hemp variety trials are very, very important for any and everybody in this industry. And super excited about that. We've partnered with NC State Research. I mean, we were the first. I didn't know what to do except bring all the smart people in to help us figure it out. So to see how just the science in the varieties and on farm, we've done plasticulture trials, mycorrhizal trials, all into that stuff on just the farming aspect is pretty, pretty cool.
Oh, no, that is cool. And, you know, I think, you know, I definitely want to hear more about, you know, those trials and everything, you know, but in that regard as well, you know, I want to hear, you know, talking about your past, kind of your journey through this. I mean, what led you to hemp? What led you to being a hemp farmer? What led you to Franny's Pharmacy? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you know, it's good that hindsight gives us perspective because as I grew up, my parents divorced at a young age. My mom, this huge corporate businesswoman running, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in finance world. And then my dad was a cattle farmer. And you know, what really came of that. Went to forestry school, had a master's in education, worked in a pharmaceuticals for over 12 years. That's really where my corporate experience came from before I transitioned and said, I'm out of corporate world and the unhealthcare industry. But back in forestry school, I wrote a paper after I read The Emperor Wears No Clothes. Well, I was sold at that point. I was like, what are you talking about? This Mexican ditch weed that we smoke every day just so we could focus, it's like a vitamin, is also can be used for fiber and all these uses. So 30 years ago, I was, you know, the blinders were off. And I always was a supporter of it. My dad, a cattle farmer in Tennessee, where they used to grow that stuff, they call it ditch weed. It's everywhere. It's hemp. People aren't grabbing that out of the ditch and smoking it. So always been an advocate for cannabis for decades, but it was illegal. I always knew that it could be something that could revolutionize. And my son jokes at 25 now, he's like, used to say it could revolutionize our entire economy. And now here we are doing it. And that's why I always put visionary on everything. Everybody thinks I'm a dreamer, but you know, some of us dream and believe and have hope for the future. And here we are. So in hindsight, it just all came to be when I found out that, I was speaking business of farming, and I told you what was going on in North Carolina. We started signing petitions, and I met the person in charge who was leading the charge on that. And I jumped on. I'm like, well, let's see what we can do. Let me see what I can do. So I helped in those efforts. And just like we want to have so many different angles on politics and the benefits and what it serves us and what it doesn't. Well, we went 5 times to vote on North Carolina being able to grow hemp. If 5 times it was declined. And then randomly one day, 3 weeks before we were supposed to grow, we get a message and we're like, 11:59, it passed last night. We got our hemp pilot program approved in North Carolina. So it was game on. I had that point right there. I was like, what do we do? Look or leap? And I was like, let's just leap. So leaped and then look, don't suggest doing that in this industry right now because there was nobody. We had no choice but to be vertically integrated, which is where we are now, from growing, processing, manufacturing, distribution, franchises. I mean, there was nobody else to turn to. There's definitely better ways to enter the market now. But from all that experience, it just seemed to work out for us. Here we are, almost 4 years later.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that funny, right? I mean, it's we talk about the plant and we talk about the industry and this growing industry. And it seems like four years is ancient at this point, right? In certain regards, you know, in that way, like you said, there wasn't any systems, so to speak, in the same way that there are now. You know, there were from, you know, the old heads, you know, the legacy market and everything going on like that. So, but you know, in terms of hemp, it was a little bit different as well. Now, you know, you'd have talking about background in forestry, talking about background in pharmaceuticals, and obviously, you know, running companies and everything like that. So I can see how did you, you know, and obviously the desire and that vision, right? You're talking about a visionary. But like you said, there wasn't so much of the systems in place. So how did you go about in that time? You said you leaped in, right? Was there someone there to help show you the ropes at least a little bit in one way or another, or just kind of trial and error? You know, you said that the first time it was more industrial kind of hemp, and then you got the genetics in and everything like that. But, you know, what was that process like?
Well, I have one of my dearest best friends now, Blake Butler, who is now the executive director of the Southeastern Hemp Association. We joined forces there. And up until that point, he had just been he had run his own PR company. He was an advocate for cannabis and had put on educational awareness programs once a year, HempX. So we really joined forces. And he was with the North Carolina Industrial Hemp Association. Like I told you, we had to form all that. So it was all a lot of collaborations. One thing I like to say is my special characteristic is if I'm interested in anything, I will always go out and seek the best I can get in the industry as my mentor. So that was part of the objective. And I had really smart, great people, but we still had to just figure it out. And there was a lot of trial and error. And that is one thing I'm really good at is I say I am a great example of what to do and what not to do. And I will tell y'all what not to do. So as I spoke to tens of thousands of farmers right now, as I go across, you know, primarily the U.S., I'm always telling people what not to do as well from trial and error, my mistakes. I mean, that's just what it is. Some of it, you just got to figure it out. But we like to take that learning curve out for people now. Not necessary. It's too costly and expensive, but then we didn't really have any options.
Well, for sure. Definitely. You know, definitely want to get into that as well. You know, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you're right. You know, the importance of mentorship, the importance of having people who are better than you and getting the best people in the industry at the time and everything like that. It's so important, you know, in terms of short-term, long-term success. And we're definitely in a different place than we were back then. Right. So, you know, talk to me about, you know, kind of these barriers that we have. You know, you mentioned that no reason to figure it out on your own. Right. So, what are these barriers to entry that you keep talking about, you know, in terms of, you know, the industry, not business as usual. And what are you guys doing to solve that?
Yeah. So being an entrepreneur, while I had all these professional and corporate careers, you know, was also involved in real estate and entrepreneurism and had some other businesses, and Farm Bill passed. And from the outside, everybody's going to think like, great, it's legal. Well, it may be legal, but it is not business as usual because you don't advertise as usual. You can't get a normal website host server to host your website. You can't advertise, do banking. Banking and credit card processing is still a huge issue. You know, we've got SBA, PPP, all this money that is available out there to small businesses, and most of them won't even allow cannabis businesses to access that money. There are so many barriers to entry that is just common stuff. Like I said, we all, in order to be successful in business, you have to be able to accept money. And that's just the way business runs. And when you've got problems with credit card processors and banks, you know, PayPal ended up, they still have $16,000 that they held from our accounts from 3 years ago. We'll never see it. We have a women in hemp nonprofit that they kept money from because these industries still cannot, because marijuana and cannabis is not federally legal. They cannot differentiate from the computers on the outside what's legal and not. So they just say, nobody gets it. So this is part of the reason, you know, in my philosophy and really higher vibe, I love to use that higher vibe, philosophies of business, the only way to truly be successful is to help other people. And not only do we help other people with our products, obviously that's great, but this is why we spent a year and a lot of painful lessons too getting into the franchise business so that we can help other people while growing our brand. We've been able to bring in amazing entrepreneurs that are like-minded, and for the same, probably a whole lot less money, instead of having to go out and figure out all these hard things. Like, we're trying to take money. Oh, guess what? PayPal wants to keep it. Oh, guess what? They're going to block your credit card transactions and you can't even accept money. We just figure all these systems out for everybody. And so we cut down the time. By the time you sign a lease in franchising, within 2 months, your doors are open, you're making money. So let's just say it was $100,000 to be a really good, even, round, close number that you had to start a business. You can do that and be operational, making money within your 6 month window of everything versus trying to go out and get nickel and dime, figuring it out and not having success. Getting rejected. Again, business is about offering a valuable product and service and getting paid for it and continuing that model. So the only way to do that and the best, most efficient way is by plugging in a system. And we've seen it. So I love your personal story. Like, I mean, you came up and you know what it's like. That's the American, it's part of the American dream. But the American dream, I think, has been all reconfigured here these last couple of years. And I mean, this is just a really good place where the franchise model still makes perfect sense, especially in cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely seen it. We've seen it popping up a little bit more in cannabis for sure. You know, I was telling you before, I think we got on the air that that was kind of, you know, our family entrepreneurs. And, you know, my dad was a McDonald's thing, right? So he was a franchisee for McDonald's for many years. And, you know, there offers a lot of benefits for sure. You know, I was saying, you know, no one knows Daniel's Burgers, but everybody knows McDonald's, right? So, you know, talk to me about as well, like, what does that process kind of look like, you know, in terms of Franny's, you know, Franny's franchising, right? Franny's Franny's pharmacy and getting one set up and everything like that. What are some, you know, you mentioned a lot of those benefits, right? You know, in terms of getting things ready for you and kind of shortening that that learning curve and everything and having that system in place for you, right? But as well, you know, what does it look like in practicality, right? You know, and do you let people kind of have autonomy, you know, or you let them do their thing? It's like, listen, just do what we tell you to do. We guarantee you'll be successful that way. Or how does that kind of work as well?
Well, the first part of the process belongs to the person that's inquiring. And that can all be done through our website. Everything's in our website. So you hit go to Franny's Pharmacy, Franny's with a Y, F-A-R-M. We say putting the farm back in pharmacy, right? And you hit on that franchise link and it connects you with our inside person. So in order, we always have to do market research to see if you're in a viable place to actually run a profitable dispensary. We have probably 30% of the inquiries that come in, they are not in a viable region or city or market to do, to really be, you know, we want to make sure there's a certain profit, that it's going to be profitable and that that state allows, there's certain regulations in each state. So there's a discovery piece of that. And like I said, there's, you know, it's now about 20%, 20 to 30%. They're just not in markets that are going to be quite ready yet. So we have to do market research. Our entire franchise company looks to find great real estate locations. Every store looks the same. So it's super easy. How do you upfit it? We have construction. We have contracts. We have our wholesale and distribution center that knows how to package together an order, our marketing department that knows how to set up all your stuff tied into the big picture, do press releases, have a grand opening, and boom, you're in business making money. And you're learning. And this is what we always look back and do. We were like, what was your favorite thing about getting that store open? And I was like, training, because they get to come stay on the farm. We have lodging on the farm, and that's really like this heart and soul. And so they get to see baby goats and have a farm meal and tour everything. And that's always, they're like, oh, we just love the social part, because everything else is ongoing. The learning never stops. So, you know, they're completely supported through marketing and weekly calls and dispensary loyalty programs. Like, the cycle really never ends, and it becomes, you know, a group, a team, especially right now as we have 8 franchises in 4 states. We are super excited to welcome Sandra Holland in Charlotte, North Carolina, who is going to be our first female franchise owner, opening in Charlotte in Q2. I know, I'm so excited. I kept saying that all along. Where are the women? Where are the women? And I do a lot of things with and for women, obviously, as a woman CEO in this business and in this industry. And I was like, it is not our responsibility in our time because of COVID to forget everything else in life and begin cooking, homeschooling, and losing our minds in this transition. There is more to this about women and business and empowerment. And it's just amazing to see what is happening all over the place. So I had always just been like, we're the women, we're a woman-owned business, we're the women franchise owners. And so I'm super excited about that. And we've got another discovery day with more women coming. So I just, that really makes me happy.
Love it. Love it. I know, you know, definitely, you know, empowering women in the space is something we talk about here and something that's passionate to you as well. You know, in terms of the franchises, you know, like I said, I myself am fascinated by franchises. I've, like I said, grew up in the space. You know, I've done a lot of research in terms of companies who have started off franchising and what makes the successful ones, what makes the non-successful ones, how do people grow at the right pace? How do people keep people happy? Like you said, the advertisement, the marketing, everything that goes along with it, you know, and it's so fascinating to hear company stories in that regard, right? You know, recently I was listening to, doing some research on Chick-fil-A, right? I mean, you know, for some, you know, Chick-fil-A has become one that's a little more controversial, whatever else it is, but you can't knock the fact that everywhere you go, they just have lines, you know, gigantic lines that disrupt almost everybody else's business, right? Or bring business, right? Because they're bringing business where they're going, right? You know, and I was, it was like, what makes them so good? And they're naming some of the things that made them unique, right? And one of the things was, you know, they have 60,000 applicants a year and they accept, you know, 0.17 of them. So I forgot how many they actually accept a year, but you know, it's minimal. They have so many people who are applying, right? And they're looking for certain qualities in their franchisees, you know, and everything like that. So absolutely. What are you guys looking for in franchise, you know, in your franchisees, you know, what really does that look like? You know, is it like, oh, cool, you got 10K, you know, and you know, the money to do it. Or is there like, you know what, all that stuff, honestly, a secondary, we actually want this and this and this and this. Otherwise you can, you know, we can find the right place for you. We can do the market research. We can give you all the tools, but you're not going to be successful because you're missing this and this. So talk to me about what kind of that kind of looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. That's such a great question because there's the eligibility, which you have to be able to meet the eligible requirements for the next phase. So it's not like you can be eligible if you've got, you know, your $10,000 in debt, you know, so we have eligibility requirements. You've got to be able to meet that. But then personality and alignment and integrity and values, I can tell you our franchisee owners that all of them are amazing humans individually, and they're very aligned with our values. So there's a lot of other type of questions on social experiments and psychology of business and so forth that we look at beyond just, do you meet the financial requirements? We do discovery days. There's a lot of vetting on both sides. So all our franchisee owners, they are all family people. A lot of them have associations with farms. We have a pharmacist. We have somebody else that was an entrepreneur, who's married to somebody that works in agriculture. You know, it's really interesting, but through all the vetting, you start finding out, is this somebody that is aligned in values and not trying to change the system? So we all know eligibility, but there's a whole lot of other things that go beyond that. And like, you know, that you can't necessarily quantify, but as they go through systems, discovery days, there's manufacturing, there's distribution, there's farm, there's visits here, there's a good dating period. And we are small enough right now as we launched, these franchisees are what we like, they love to call themselves part of the family. We do all the play on words for Franny. And that's what it feels like. I mean, we're all, and I'm even included on that, on Fridays, we're all on calls together about what's the next marketing plan, you know, our dispensary loyalty programs. So it is very much a collective right now. And we all know that if you fit in or you don't, and pretty much you just got to be an ethical, authentic, financially qualified person in the right area that can make business profits. We're setting people up for success. And if the numbers don't look right on the front end, we're like, let's revisit it again in 6 months.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like you said, you know, there's so much that goes into it. You know, that you have to have the right culture, right? That's part of the whole thing, you know, and that's why you see so many companies that fail. You know, I was always taught, right, and the fish rots from the head, right? You know, so it's so important. Yeah. It's, you know, you look at these companies that fail all the time. You're like, what's going on? It's like, oh, they had shitty culture. Like they had horrible, you know, bro culture, or, you know, they were just looking to make a profit and not looking out for their own employees, you know, same thing, you know, learning that your most important customer is your internal customer, right? Your employees, you know, and all these kind of things, all these kind of topics that, you know, they seem so cliche, right? Or they seem like outdated in certain regards, but this is what makes businesses and makes them, you know, anybody can have money and throw it on money. You know, you can see in the cannabis industry, especially, right? People coming in and they have plenty of money in certain regards. And a lot of these big cannabis, ISOs and everything, they just continually are failing. Why is that? You know, because they had no integrity. There was nothing there that interests them about the plant. There was nothing there that interests them about, you know, the culture, anything that was going on there. It always had to do with just the bottom line. How can we scale and how can we throw money at it? And it's going to come out the right way, because that's what we've done in every other industry that we've been in. This is just another business like anything else, you know. And as you know, and as well as I know, that this is not just another industry. This is not just another business, you know, like you're saying, it's not your usual business. And it's goes in so many different directions, not just the banking, like you mentioned, and the marketing, like you mentioned, but, you know, the plant actually, you know, in a certain way, like, chooses who stays and who goes kind of thing. You know, you come in without integrity, and it just, we've seen it time and time again, that it just, people not succeeding, you know, kind of thing. So I'm glad you mentioned, you know, that kind of.
I'm so glad you mentioned and eloquently said that the way you did, because I called it hemp fever just to joke about it, because any and everybody I've seen that came in with the intention of putting profits over people, you can't fake it. They're all gone. 90% of businesses haven't made it through this industry more than a year or two in business. And that's just, this is not culturally, socially, or politically right now, is anybody looking at profits over people. Everybody needs and wants to be connected, feel important, have value, and do something that is purposeful. So no matter where you're getting in, you're not going to stay employed in a business like that. You're not going to get involved in a business like that, not in today's world. And especially even with COVID has opened up the opportunities for people. You know, everything is changing again in business, you know, and there's got to be, for long-term success and our evolution as a society and business, We got to care about the people. They're the ones spending the money. This is what really differentiates us from everybody else, is, you know, we have the story. I mean, there is a brand. There is a person behind our brand, and it is full transparency. People meet me. They stay on my property. They any and everywhere. You kind of know what Franny stands for. And we made huge investments to set our company and the industry on the right foot. We were the first people to QR code, and we've worked with the legal system and in politics. And I've sat on the commission with the FDA and all these different things to lead not only our business, but the industry. And bottom line, I mean, that's why I was super honored with the award for the Featured Farmer for Hemp History Week. This is why I was the spokesperson for all United States small-scale farmers at the National Press Conference in D.C. when they passed the Farm Bill. It's because it's not just me. It's our entire community, society, and the bigger picture that we all have to work for. We're just, I'm only going to be here a short while, you know. Oh, I got so many days and years on this planet. What are we doing? It's all about the invisible impact. So the more I can make a difference for people I've never met, will never meet, the more effective we are. And I think that is what we always hear about, what connects people to our brand.
I love that. And then, you know, congrats on all things that you've been doing and then the awards you've been getting, and the work you put in for all these years. You know, it's, as you know, it doesn't come overnight. You know, I guess, you know, you've seen so much in the last few years, you know, in terms of the industry and how it's changed. And you've seen kind of you've been through those challenges that you're helping other people to overcome now, you know, in their point of entry. What is that thing that still is an obstacle? You know, it's something that you haven't mentioned. You know, you mentioned the banking, you mentioned all, you know, what's still an obstacle for you, you know, and Franny's pharmacy, and how are you able to overcome that?
Well, now we're in a really amazing stage because it's all about restructuring now. Because as we started, it was one business, then another business. Oh, we got to add manufacturing. Now we need to do distribution. And so now we're in to set up for phase two, which is a big, huge expansion into the overall market and growth. We're streamlining, we're restructuring, we're looking at all our processes and all our efficiencies and dialing all that in so we can go into phase two. Because it's kind of like, you know, you raise a kid and then they go to kindergarten. And when you go to kindergarten, things are different. When you go to middle school, you got to get some different clothes when you outgrow those. And so it's been new system integrations, a lot of investment in infrastructure, which doesn't really make you money. And that coincides with the time of COVID and a shift in business to e-com, but you can't do a lot of things on the internet. So, you know, these are our obstacles, which we have, not obstacles, but these are the challenges. But I love that. That's what stops everybody. You know, they're like, oh, can't jump that hurdle. And to be a little petite powerhouse I am, I did hurdles in high school and I'm gonna jump them all. And if not, I'll just knock it over. I did that all the time. They'd be like, how do you place every time? You hit every one of those hurdles. I'm like, I'm just fast. You know, and they're temporary. You know, we're just setting up new systems and it's always a constant evaluation. And, you know, it meant bringing on a new COO, which is really exciting, bringing in new thought leaders that are going to bring in new innovation. Because there's a part of it, I'm like, I've worked my fingers to the bone from farming to setting up manufacturing, because I came from pharmaceuticals and I'm a super research geek. I love spreadsheets and data.
We're going to have a spreadsheet off then, because I love spreadsheets. I'm obsessed with them. I always get made fun of because I have a million spreadsheets.
They're great. They're great. We just want to know reports. I just want to know what's happening. Don't tell me that's smoke and mirrors. I don't want to hear it. I want to see it. So,
love it.
And that's where we are. And it's all in efforts to keep our cost the most affordable and competitive in the industry, keep our products the best in the industry. You know, it's super exciting. And I'm excited that this year we'll see events going live again. So opens up new opportunities and interests too. So we're just dialing it in.
Amazing. No, definitely, you know, and I love the way you put it too, where, right, it's when you're in middle school, one problems, they seem like they're the craziest problems, right? And then you go to high school and you laugh like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that was a big deal. And that, but you have a whole new set of problems, and you go to college like, oh my gosh, what the hell, you know? And then you go and you graduate and you're like, none of that stuff was problems at all. I can't believe I put any time into that whatsoever, you know? And it's just like, but they change, right? And now, you know, you're talking about those systems, that infrastructure. It's not sexy, right? Like you said, it doesn't save money, or it doesn't make money, so to speak, but it does, because it saves you time and it saves you pain, right? And as we know, time is money, right? And having that learning curve and being able to integrate things that can be repeated over and over again, and optimizing, these are like the things that ultimately, you know, we all have to do, you know, in business in order to continue to grow. Otherwise, we're just spinning our tails, you know? We're just doing things based off emotion or based off of feelings and, you know, whatever, you know, the weather's like and everything. But, you know, it's super important, you know, that to have those unsexy things in business, you know, the things that nobody really wants to think about. Everybody wants to talk about the branding, the design, and all that stuff's great. You know what I mean? Or the yep, colors and the this and the that. And, you know, ultimately it's like all that stuff can be changed. You know, what are you going to do to make sure you're protecting yourself, you know, that we're doing things the right way time and time again, over and over again, you know? So, like you said, it's a process. Yeah. So
and Yeah, exactly. And because this industry is unregulated right now, knowing and forecasting what those regulations are and putting that into practice now, ahead of time, just like we did with QR codes, just like we did with COAs, just like we did all this stuff, you know, it's like you said, it's not super sexy to get GMP certified, you know, global manufacturing practices, good manufacturing practices, but it is what will be coming down the pipe, you know, lots of money, and you don't have anything to see for it. You just get a little certificate at the end and a GMP, but it's going to be really important to conducting business in the future.
Well, for sure. Definitely. Now, you know, as we start to wind down here, you know, seeing as how having these background forestry, pharmaceuticals, now it's Franny's pharmacy, you know, everything else, the franchising, the family, everything else that goes along with it. You know, there's a lot of obviously different aspects that we talk about when we talk about success. And, you know, it's one of the most fascinating things. I'm talking about how I'm fascinated by franchises and friends about a bunch of stuff. That's why I'm grateful to have you on. And that's why I have this podcast, really, because I'm just a curious guy. But, you know, one of the things I always want to find out is how do you define success? You know, whether it's professionally, personally, spiritually, otherwise, anything, what does success look like for you?
That's a really, really good question. And I think that success can look like a lot of different things for a lot of people. But I know for me, like looking in the mirror and knowing that my thoughts are clear, my heart is kind, and my words are true is success. Because true words right now in this industry are not met with a lot of gracious reception. They're like, oh, that's not what, because it's not what people want to hear. But I know for my personal success, that's what carries me through every aspect, my personal life, my professional life, clear thoughts, kind heart, true words, and being able to laugh every day and say my prayers every night and be grateful. That is success.
I love that. I love that. You know, say it again. It's clear. It's true words, clear head. What heart?
I like to do this, and I'll say, may my thoughts be clear, my heart be kind,
heart
and my
be words kind. Be kindness. How could I forget that? Amazing.
And my words be true. And that's my own personal mantra that I carry every day, all the time. And I say that, and I talk to myself in the mirror. And every day, I will always look back and say what I am grateful for and what was good about that day. That's success, looking at the bright side every day, no matter what happens, because it's all good. We're alive and breathing.
That's it. I'm so glad.
That in itself can be very successful, a measure of success.
Stack those things, you know, early in the morning and late at night, you know, and I'm grateful you said that, right? That's the main thing, you know, because people, sometimes you hear, well, I'll be grateful when, you know, or I'll be happy when, or I'll be successful when, and, you know, it always goes down. If you're not grateful now, you know, you're muscle memory, you're building memory just like everything else. You know, you're building your own story right now, wherever you are, wherever level you're at, whatever is going on. You know, there's always something to be grateful for. There's always something to look at the positive. There's always something, and, you know, not lying to ourselves either, right? But there's always, you know, heck, you know, like you said, we're breathing today. You know, what a great gift that is. You know, what a great gift. How many times have we been talking here for an hour here, right? And how many times has our heart been beating, you know, how many breaths have we taken in, you know, and how do we count? Are we counting that? Are we saying, oh, you know, if we sure would hell know pretty quickly if it wasn't going well, you know what I mean? you know, so I'm so grateful you said that as well. So, and also that mantra, thank you for sharing that, you know, and definitely, you know, a lot of great things already. You've achieved a lot more great things for sure. And a lot of great things coming up for Franny's Pharmacy as well. So, and that, in that regard, you know, as we close, how can listeners find out more about you, find out more about Franny's Pharmacy, connect with you, maybe apply for franchising or anything else that, you know, buy products as well. And anything else you guys have?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do any and everything on the Franny's Pharmacy website, from buying products. Please support us. Try our products. I stand behind them. There was no animal testing, but lots of Franny testing. So you can get our products, sign up for wholesale accounts, inquire about franchising all through our website, frannyspharmacy.com. You can follow me personally, Franny Tacy, on Instagram and Facebook, LinkedIn, to learn more about what a woman CEO and leader is doing in the industry. It's a little bit more of a personal profile. And by all means, follow us on Franny's Farm. Come stay with us and see us. We have cabins. And during hemp grow season, we're doing hemp history tours and allowing visitors. So we're all over the place. Just look up Franny, F-R-A-N-N-Y, and you're going to find us everywhere.
Love it. Franny, what a pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm grateful that you took the time here to be on this, and grateful for everybody wherever you're listening to for checking this out. Really appreciate all of you. Thank you for listening, as I said, and all the best to you, Franny, the rest of the year and beyond.
All right. Thank you, Maynard. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's grow@calacann.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.